newspress.com.
Welcome to another edition of Money Talk. I'm Neil Kreisel, and Diane Duver are your hosts every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 11, and on Saturdays at 6. We're brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending, whose highly trained and experienced team takes great pride in helping people with home financing, offering competitive rates and a wide array of loan programs. Arnaldi's Cafe, one of Santa Barbara's oldest and most intimate restaurants since 1937, located on the corner of Olive and Cota Street in downtown Santa Barbara, at Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm in Santa Barbara, providing its clients with the personal care and attention of a small independent firm, coupled with the vast resources of a major financial institution.
And it's Neil's birthday today, everyone. So we have to wish him a happy birthday on the air.
I hope so. And what we've decided to do today, a little bit different, is to basically speak about me.
And, it's a historic day, so right. It's like this day in history.
And everyone knows where the studio is located, and we have an hour to bring me presents.
So before we get into the articles, I just want to introduce our guests.
Are we done with my birthday?
Oh, sorry. Let's talk more about your birthday.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
We have with us on the line Pamela Capola and Dialect from they're Manhattan-based financial planners, and we are excited to hear about the innovativeness of their firm and what they do with their clients. Thanks for being here.
Pamela. Hi, thanks for having us.
Peace, y'all. That's what's up. Yes, Pam and Dialect, but you got the wrong planet. We're from Brooklyn.
Oh, Brooklyn. All right. Uh-oh, there might be some competitiveness because Neil is Manhattan.
Well,
No, there's no such thing as competition. We're from Brooklyn.
Well, I'm not going to listen too hard because I've spent the 19 years living here losing my New York accent, and I don't want to catch it. I'm going to try and not listen to you because...
you might get it back.
I sound...
we're used to Californians trying not to listen to us. You'll fail.
Right. So
happy birthday, by the way.
Thank you.
Great choice of song.
Yeah.
Thank you. That was Richard, our genius engineer, who chose that song.
Richard has taste.
He does. So as we always do, we begin the show with some interesting articles. And the first article was from today. Actually, there's two articles in today's Wall Street Journal that sort of go together. And this one, which was on the front page, is entitled Global Growth Loses Steam. And when Americans look at the stock market, we see, over the last several years, a record-breaking performance, but we don't pay attention probably enough to what's going on internationally. And in the last quarter or two, there's been a dramatic slowdown in international business. And, the second article partly explains that because the stronger dollar has really wreaked havoc with some of the economies, particularly Brazil, Indonesia, where their central banks are having a real problem dealing with the fact that the dollar is strong, and therefore the cost of importing is a problem for them, and the cost of their American dollar-based loans are causing them some pressure. But the point here is that the article says, look, half of the earnings in the S&P 500 come from international sources. So the fact that the stock market is so good, and if we looked at the figures that were reported Friday about job growth and wage growth, while they were terrific, we need to consider that so much of the earnings of the S&P is not in America, and therefore independent of the whole tariff issue, there should be some concern about what's going on internationally.
Well, we really are a global economy today, and I think that the tariffs and that article definitely underscore the importance of, globalization and embracing it, because that's where we are.
Some of the articles that we talk about are just interesting, and some of them we really learn from. And this next article is one that I think both Diane and I were both surprised, and it gave us an opportunity to look at something that neither of us were aware of. And it's called The New Twist on Paying for a House. And I had no idea this existed, but there are companies now that are making deals to put up half the deposit of a new home buyer, helping the new home buyer who doesn't have the resources to buy the kind of house they want because they don't have enough cash to put down, but can make the payments on a mortgage that would be available if they had the full deposit. And the way it works is these companies pay for half the deposit. And the way they get compensated is at the end of the residency or ownership of the homeowner, they split two-thirds, a third. They get a third of any appreciation. And during the period of home ownership, there's no payment whatsoever to this lender slash partner. The only time they get paid is the sooner of when the homeowner sells or when 30 years are up. And it's a way for new home buyers or home buyers that want to step up and buy something that otherwise they wouldn't be able to do, to actually do it. Now, there's some restrictions because Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac won't let you do this. So they have to create an opportunity with banks that they know to have this transaction approved. But they're in 22 states, and they're trying to get Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac to look at this. And it would be a way of expanding opportunity to buy homes from people who have the income to support the mortgage but don't have the cash available for the down payment.
Yeah, and I think it actually makes a lot of sense for people who struggle to get together that down payment money. And lots of times, especially the millennials, may be high-income earners, but they haven't been able to amass that type of 20%, especially in markets such as Santa Barbara, where, you know, entry-level homes are, I think I just read an article, hovering just under $1 million.
And the other interesting thing about this is that while the outside observer may say, how could these people possibly make money doing this? The average homeowner sells their house within 7 years. So there are people that keep their house way beyond 30 years, but typically people move after 7 years. And so I suspect that's part of the calculus that these companies are putting into their to their schemes. The next article is entitled, which is kind of ironic, Why Are Home Sales, New Home Sales So Weak? And here the article talks about, and by the way, the sales of newly built single-family homes in April fell 1.5%, and that's what triggered this article. But the problem seems to be supply, not demand. There are fewer homes on the market than we would expect, given the economic a boom that's taking place. And the problem seems to be that builders, the big home builders, Toll Brothers, for example, the stock went down dramatically last week when they reported poor results. They can't get labor. They can't get labor costs under control. Raw material costs are getting more expensive. Lumber's getting more expensive. And so the amount of building taking place is less. So the irony here is that home building is weak. And as a result, new homes are actually showing some weakness.
Yeah, and that is a measure. They do a measure of new home starts, new home builds, et cetera, and it's showing weakness, and that's a sign of weakness in the economy.
And the final article we have is entitled The Fanciful Alphabet Soup Companies Use to Fool You. And I was telling Diana before the show, this article could have been written 15 years ago because it's the same story where price-earnings ratios go up to levels that are historically high. Companies and analysts, in order to justify the higher valuations, begin to tweak what is, in fact, earnings. So earnings per share is a number that follows generally accepted accounting principles and includes all expenses relevant to that period. Well, about 25, 30 years ago, companies started using EBITDA as a substitute for earnings per share. And EBITDA is earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. which means it excludes certain expenses. And one of the things that it excludes is interest on loans. And to me, that's insane, because if you borrow money to build a new plant or to buy new equipment and you pay interest on that, how could you exclude that? But there are believers and say that, you know, that's okay. Well, now we not only have EBITDA, but we have EBITDAP without pension funds, EBITDARE without losses and gains on real estate, EBITDAC, EBITDASC, which is...
you can't even say them all.
You can't even say it, which eliminates stock-based pay for management. I mean, at some point, you're going to have, you can eliminate all expenses altogether. And this would be funny if it weren't for the fact that people actually will say the stock is cheap based on one of these alphabets. And to me, you don't justify the high price of a stock based upon excluding what I would think is not only legitimate expenses, but appropriate and necessary expenses to show the true earning power of a company.
It's so true. And as that, you know, creative accounting happens, you start to have less and less reliability in the numbers that these companies are coming up with. And that therein lies the real problem. How, if you're not comparing the financial earnings of these companies apples to apples, it's very difficult to tell who is in fact expensive and whose companies are actually cheap.
I don't think anyone can predict the market, so I hesitate to say the following, but maybe a good way to predict a market top is when you have more of these alphabets coming into play. It's is a indication that people are desperate to justify the high prices, but that is for someone smarter than me to decide.
Do those people exist, Neil? Do those people exist?
I don't think so, but, you know, there's in this town, maybe. Maybe. You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
I'm Kelly Marsh, Vice President, California, of Cornerstone Home Lending, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara native who has spent the past 20 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit thekellymarshteam.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Cornerstone Home Lending can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California Residential Mortgage Lending Act license number 41DB072220. California Financial Lending Law license number 60DB072528. Loan originator NMLS number 245822. Not a commitment to loan. Equal housing opportunity.
Hey everyone. You know, let's all stop what we're doing right now and take a moment. That felt good, huh? Just like that, we had a nice special sort of moment together. Of course, they don't all need to be quiet moments to be special. They could be loud moments, goofy moments, sporty moments, dorky moments. Moments where we talk or walk or just hang out. It doesn't really matter. They all count. Because every time dads like us take a moment like that to spend with our kids, well, it's pretty momentous. Sounds like somebody agrees. So let's take a moment to make a moment. Today, call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending. Since 1988, a mortgage banker and direct lender that believes in providing in-depth loan consulting to its customers in a personalized and honest manner. And we could be reached at 805-564-1290. And did you notice I gave the area code first? Because now in Santa Barbara, you have to put the area code first.
I know. I just got that alert. Or you could also email us at moneytalk1290@gmail.com. And we have in studio, or not in studio with us, on the line with us, Pam Capola, who and Dialect, And they are actually, or Pam actually was a UCSB alumni. So Pam, what brought you to Santa Barbara?
The radio station's KZSB.
Pam, oh. Hi.
Hi.
How are you? We welcome to the show. So what, you know, I noticed that you're a UCSB graduate. What brought you to Santa Barbara? Where are you from? Give us your background story.
Yeah, I am originally, I grew up in the Bay Area in San Leandro, which is a town right next to Oakland in the East Bay. And Santa Barbara, actually I was in the College of Creative Studies and I majored in literature. And so that particular program is what brought me to UC Santa Barbara.
Oh, great. And so then what led your passion into finance?
Yeah, it was really unexpected. I'm sure a literature degree doesn't sound like, oh, and now you're a financial planner. But I was, I took a random summer job teaching financial literacy camps for kids when I was a sophomore, and it completely changed my life. I was teaching 10-year-olds and 12-year-olds and 14-year-olds how to budget and save and understand credit cards and like start their own businesses. And I was always told that the path to success was to get good grades, go to a good college, and then get a good job, and that was it. And when I had to learn all of this content that I was teaching these kids, it showed me how many more options there were to make money, to find success, and it really like gave me, it was like a light bulb moment for me, and it made me realize how much I was really passionate about personal finance and financial literacy. So then I decided, all right, I only have a literature degree, so, and I want to do finance, and I want to continue to teach youth. And so that's what led me to actually moving to New York and taking a job in financial services. And my whole plan was to do financial services for a couple years, learn everything I can, and then go back and teach kids. And, you know, that it took a lot longer than I thought it was going to, let's put it that way. But yeah, it was the path that really led me down to becoming a certified financial planner, and doing Pocket Change, which is the hip hop and finance workshops that Dialect and I do with our partner, who actually is based in Santa Barbara, Andrea Ferrero. She's the director of the program. She's the director of Pocket Change overall.
So tell us a little bit about Pocket. Is it Pocket Change or Pockets Change?
Pockets Change. Yeah, the S is on the word pocket. It's a quote from Gertrude Stein.
Yeah, the quote is, money is always there, just the pockets change. It's not always in the same pockets after a change.
You know, it's sort of our take about our philosophy with what we do and what we talk about. You know, capitalism is a good thing. We're not anti-capitalist at all. We think that capitalism, at its heart, is a circle where money is constantly in motion. And we want to acknowledge that because that's often the reality.
Yeah, and so Pockets Change really started. Andrea also taught these financial literacy camps, and that's how we met, and we really became passionate about teaching youth financial literacy. And we ended up writing a school curriculum for teachers, and we realized that a lot of teachers were afraid to teach this content themselves because they felt like they didn't know enough.
Well, it's not even a we realized. They straight up told us.
Yeah. And so we realized, Andrea and I realized that we needed to probably teach these workshops on our own, at least at first, and figure out what the need was. And then we ended up bringing Dialect in and his hip-hop pedagogy and his hip-hop education expertise to make it more relevant and relatable to the kids.
Well, yeah, and relevant and relatable, not because hip-hop education is some hot, newfangled thing. Hip-hop's been around longer than a lot of folks have been alive now. I've been an MC, playwright, and hip-hop educator for about 15-ish years, and I say that all together because I mostly do it all together. My first album was a one-man play in a six-week curriculum about identity and self-efficacy. And so I've been talking a lot with youth about the ways that they learn and the ways that they interact with society, both in the classroom and how they interact out in the world. And one thing that became increasingly important in my education work and with my students' needs was what they were doing about their monetary situation. A lot of kids that either come from areas where they don't have a lot of money in their family, they are in the system, or they are otherwise disadvantaged, and they've needed to hustle in a lot of different various ways. They needed to figure out how to create their own avenues towards income and their own ways of building wealth. So we've been doing that in the hip-hop education classes, and I had a program job prep program that was helped developed by Claudia and Jesse Alec at the Public Theater and Oregon Shakespeare Festival, respectively, where we had students go through a Lincoln Douglas debate that was based in rap. So you would write a poem for your opening argument. You would learn how to freestyle or kick something off the head as your rebuttal. But really, that's a job prep workshop. We're teaching kids how to handle curveballs, how to code switch, how to look someone in the eye, how to be strong communicators in any area and medium.
And so how do you integrate the hip-hop with the financial planning curriculum? You gave me a taste of it with they write a poem and have their opening argument, but, you know, money often comes down to dollars and cents, and how do you relate those concepts through movement?
Well, we don't relate them necessarily through movement. When I say hip-hop, I mean hip-hop, the philosophy, not hip-hop, the bastardized idea of hip-hop that is told to people as a dance form. Hip-hop, in its essence, breaks down into two different things. We've got the aesthetic element, your b-boying, DJing, graffiti, rap, and beatboxing. And then you have your philosophical elements, which are the community building and the group learning. So the aesthetic elements are to get kids to understand what ways in which they learn. So we try out a lot of rhythmic-based stuff to get them to understand what their method of learning is. And once they learn how they learn, they can learn anything. And the community stuff is much more about getting people to understand how group learning works, removing hierarchy, learning more in circles, and having an area where students get to take autonomy and take control of what they're doing.
A big focus of Pocket Change in general is I feel like there's a lot of financial literacy programs that are focused on how to write a check, how to calculate compound interest, do you understand, you know, what a mortgage is and things like that. And one thing that we found, especially when we're teaching younger kids, like we were just in April and May, we just taught 2-week-long programs in Lompoc, California, actually. So we were just out there. And when you're in middle school and when you're in elementary school, the most important thing about financial literacy is not the literacy part of it. It's feeling capable. It's learning how to advocate for yourself. It's learning how to communicate clearly. It's learning how to speak about your savings plan and your habits and how to analyze what your spending is and like why the spending is more important to you than other kinds of spending. So a lot of our focus with Pocket Change, and this is where a lot of the hip-hop pedagogy comes in, is really understanding yourself within the financial system and understanding your own financial habits, especially if you want to make progress and like understand your relationship with money.
One of the interesting things that I found, I was asked by a charity in town here to do a financial literacy course for teens. And I found after the first year when I went back, no one learned anything. So I went on the web and I looked at the results across the country in high school and junior high school literacy programs. And the study that they did, I forgot which university did it, found that almost none of the programs worked. That is, there was no retention. Even if the kids seemed to learn something during the class, in any period of time that went by, there was very little understanding that they maintained. And so I think there really is a need for a way of getting to these kids, because the traditional way of teaching finance just doesn't seem to resonate with them. You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Diane Duva with an invitation for you to enjoy a great dining experience at my favorite restaurant, the world-famous Arnaldi's Cafe, one of Santa Barbara's oldest and most intimate restaurants since 1940. It's located on the corner of Olive and Cota Streets in downtown Santa Barbara. Arnaldi's specializes in traditional home-style Italian food prepared with the freshest produce, finest quality meats and fish, and the very best imported Italian meats, cheeses, and olive oil, along with local fish and specials from our Santa Barbara Farmers Market, and an extensive wine list served in the unique atmosphere of a candlelit dining room. Arnaldi's also caters to weddings and rehearsal dinners, receptions, graduations, birthdays, holiday parties, or any special event, with 2 large dining rooms, a huge heated patio, fire pit, 2 bocce ball courts, and a stone barbecue with red oak wood. And Arnaldi's is happy to work with you to create a custom menu and handle any special requests. Visit arnaldis.com or call 805-962-5394.
It's a fact. Successful wealth management is built on strategies that focus on the big picture, take a long-term view, and establish deep and valued relationships.
Hello, I'm Diane Duva, founding partner at Arlington Financial Advisors, Santa Barbara's trusted family guide, empowering you to make more informed and confident decisions. At Arlington Financial Advisors, we bring order and balance to your financial life by monitoring and managing risk so you can focus on your work, family, and enjoying the moment. We are a fully independent firm offering strategic financial planning, estate and tax planning, and private money management. Our plans and portfolios are handcrafted using a rigorous and disciplined approach, supported by a consistent yet highly personalized client experience. Our clients look to Arlington Financial Advisors as a home away from home, a comfortable place to protect what they've accomplished while they prepare for what comes next. Please visit arlingtonfinancialadvisors.com or call me, Diane Duva, at 805-699-7300.
Welcome back to Money Talk. I'm here with Diane Duva, and I said Diane Duva again because she was mad that I pronounced her name wrong before, and it wasn't Duva I pronounced wrong, it was Diane.
Well, the first 2 years it was the Duva part. Now, now you're regressing back on the Diane.
It's Diane, right? Not
yes,
Diana.
Diane. Correct.
Good. Then you should spell it correctly, but I'm not going to get into that. We're brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial guidance.
And we're speaking with the founders of Pockets Change, and we're talking about what a wonderful program that is, helping to teach youth about financial literacy through hip-hop education. And so, Dialect, how do people, you know, what are your age groups that you actually cover in this program?
Well, we mostly have been working with middle and high school students and early college, but in the breadth of our program, we have worked from pre-K through grad school and adults.
Yeah, and we actually have a partnership with Girls Rock in Santa Barbara, and we've worked with girls as young as six.
Oh,
so
wow.
Shout out Girls Rock Santa Barbara.
Yeah, seriously. And so now, are you a 501c3 Pockets Change, or are you a for-profit?
We're actually in the middle of getting our 501c3, so you're the first to find out, actually.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, we're currently a for-profit, and we're putting together a nonprofit arm so we can start working in some areas where, you know, it's really important for us to service people who can't necessarily afford the types of things that we're talking about.
Absolutely. And, you know, in your website, you cover, you know, your workshop offering is quite extensive, and one of them is College Life and Beyond, which talks about the FAFSA basics and all of that information as people are starting to apply for colleges and financial aid. And that, I know, is a big need in the community. That FAFSA form is very confusing to most people.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. Well,
in the past, 3 years, I think, we've been at the Financial Literacy and Economic Justice Conference over at Berkeley.
Yeah,
UC Berkeley. Excuse me. I forget all the different variations out there in Cali. But, you know, it's amazing the things that you present and the slack-jawed faces of these kids when you start talking about a credit score and the contradictory elements for putting together a credit score. They're like, wait, what you said right there that, well, then which one of those is more important? And you completely understand because none of us got any of this background anywhere.
Yeah, well, and then to have to fill out a FAFSA form, never having to have filled out tax returns before. And I remember when I had to fill out the FAFSA and I asked my mom for her tax return and she was like, why do you need to see my tax return? So even just like having to be 17 and like not having to ever do your taxes before and having to like look at all this paperwork, I feel like the introduction into that and into kind of starting to understand systems is a big part of what we do.
So maybe
when we work with high school and college kids.
Maybe President Trump should take your course and then he would let us see his tax return.
I know, right?
right. Why well, the kids would have to take the course.
Yeah.
We're all about the intergenerationality.
So now, what is your most popular course offering, and how, if someone out there is listening, would they get in touch with you to book one of your workshops?
Yeah, so our most popular course is actually our Financial Basics course, and that really goes, there's a Financial Basics course, and then we also do a job prep course. So those two have been the most popular. The Financial Basics covers earning income both through business as an employee, and also covers the psychology of money, money personalities, building habits, and we also will cover banking, saving, and credit cards and credit scores.
And then the job prep and career prep program is really helping students figure out what they want to do, helping them figure out how to talk about their strengths and their weaknesses, and really have an understanding of how to go into an interview in a way that they can be themselves, be confident, and also showcase what their abilities and their skills are.
Yeah, when you were talking earlier about being involved in financial literacy courses where students weren't retaining, the issues are twofold. One is that there's not enough talk about your actual relationship with money. When we talk to kids, we talk about how, you know, people will give you nutrition advice or fitness advice, but if it doesn't work out for your body, it's not strong advice. So it's the same for your brain and your relationship with money. And also, a lot of these programs are very abstract. You know, they'll have you do some stock picking in a random place where there's no actual money, so you're just playing around. So we try to start off with a lot of mindset stuff and then add on some concrete, actual things that they can build on.
Yeah, and you can contact us through the website on Pocket Change or pocketschange.com, or reach out to our director, Andrea, at andrea@pocketschange.com.
Yes. And yeah, so, Andrea also is a founder.
Yes.
So to reach out to Andrea, do you actually go into the school system, or is it primarily through nonprofits such as Girls Rock, or, you know, maybe?
We do both, actually. Yeah, so we've done it across the board. We work with a foster care program in Woodland, California. We work with Girls Rock. We've worked with institutions in New York, nonprofits in New York. We were at two middle schools in Lompoc, California, recently, and so we've been put in basically every sort of situation where there's kids involved, I think.
Yeah, if you have some folks and they need to talk about some kind of money, we'll find a room and we'll talk about it.
Yeah, and Dialect, in his hip-hop education work, has worked with so many different populations across the gamut, from like teaching like Yale master classes to teaching in juvenile detention halls. So
yeah.
So before you get your 501c3, how do you, what's the business model? How do you get paid for the services?
Yeah, so usually the organization themselves find funding through their 501c3 status. So they'll get a grant from a foundation, or they'll raise money through a local bank, and that's how they pay for us to come in. And so that's the main business model. But one thing that we found is, especially with organizations that we do want to work with, is they need help getting funding as much as they need our help to come into their space. And so what we want to do is to be able to partner in a different way, and that's why we decided it made sense to do the 501c3 status.
Absolutely. And so, you know, let's transition for a moment into, you know, as I was looking at your, Pamela, your website about brunch and budget, it very much takes a different approach to financial planning. And so share with us what brunch and budget actually is.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I did wealth management for 7 years, as I mentioned. And at the same time, I was the only finance person among all of our friends. And so I would sometimes get cornered at parties and people would be like, what's an IRA? I have credit card debt. They'd ask me all kinds of financial questions. And I realized that there was such a need for it, but there was such a fear around actually like sitting down and figuring all this stuff out. I think that we've been taught to feel ashamed and embarrassed and feel alone about our finances. And I think that's where a lot of our lack of financial capability really comes into play. And so the brunch part really came in when I had a friend who came up to me and she was like, Pam, I really need help with my credit card debt, but I'm so afraid to look. And I literally said, do you want to like do it over brunch or something? And she said, okay. And her face completely changed. We met over brunch. The conversation felt very comfortable and just changed the way that we could talk about money. It put it in a setting where we found some common ground. We were able to break bread together. And so I just decided to start offering brunches in exchange for financial advice for my friends. That's how it started off. And then they started telling their friends and started telling their friends and started telling their friends. And that's when I was like, maybe people need this. And that's where Brunch and Budget was really born. And one thing that I found, especially a lot of my clients are millennials, a lot of my clients are people of color, and they're really in a place where our only adult life that we know is the recession. I started in financial services in 2008 when I was 22. So my entire adult life has been the recession and the recovery from that. And I have so many clients and so many friends who have student loan debt, who had to go back to grad school, who couldn't find a job, who went into credit card debt to make ends meet. And I think we're all kind of in this place of we're not accumulating wealth so much as we're trying to catch up from what the last 10 years have been. And so I think compounded on that with the idea that, like, why don't we have this all figured out by now? Brunch and Budget has become what I hope is just like a haven for people to be able to have these conversations and feel comfortable kind of spilling all the beans, you know?
Absolutely.
You're listening to Money Talk on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station, and we'll be right back.
Star Jasmine Music serves over 3,600 people per year. By providing a safe, supportive environment to explore music, you'll find a place that resonates within. We teach songwriting and how to play a variety of instruments. We have a Pro Tools state-of-the-art recording facility and provide opportunities for teens and young adults who show passion for music and demonstrate talent to record their work. This experience has been known to better one's self-esteem and often leads to development of skills in business and self-management. We have special programs for at-risk youth, as well as the mentally and physically challenged. When ready after a 10-week series, we record our students and give them a CD to show the fruit of their efforts. This experience leads to self-confidence. Visit us at www.starjasminemusic.org. Star Jasmine Music. Sharing music exploration through teaching and recording.
Need a new Social Security card? You probably don't, as long as you know your number. For all intents and purposes, your number is your card. Usually, providing your number and identifying information is enough. In the event that you really do want or need a replacement card for yourself or for a child, you can find all the details you need at the Social Security Number and Card page at www.socialsecurity.gov/ssnumber. This page provides information on how to obtain a replacement card and what specific documents you need to provide. Check it out if you really need a new card. But remember, you may just need to know your number. Your card is already in your head. Visit www.socialsecurity.gov/ssnumber.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arnaldi's Cafe, one of Santa Barbara's oldest and most intimate restaurants since 1937, located on the corner of Olive and Cota Street in downtown Santa Barbara.
And so if you're just joining us, we're talking about Brunch and Budget, which is a novel concept, really, to really take the scariness out of talking about money and making it more comfortable for people. And so, Pamela, when you go to brunch, because you live in Brooklyn, not to be confused with Manhattan, things are expensive there. And so who pays? Who brings out the credit card at the end of it to pay for the bill?
The client actually does. So the exchange is, it's pay what you can, and then you provide the meal. So I actually have a lot of clients who invite me over to their home and cook a meal. And that's how we break bread together. And then that's what they pay for, essentially, in exchange for the financial advice.
Oh, that's an interesting concept. And so also some of your services are, you have Budge Coach and Budge Life. What are the differences between those, and how do people engage you in that fashion?
Yeah, so the Brunch and Budget is sort of this one time looking for general advice. We talk through a lot of things, and a lot of clients walk away with next steps. But one thing that I found is that a lot of people meet for brunch and they start trying to do something or implement some of this stuff, and they get stuck, and they realize they don't know how to move forward. And so Budge Life and Budge Coach are really ongoing financial planning programs designed to help you get through all of the advice that we talked about. It's amazing when I've walked clients through how to talk to their student loan servicer, for instance. Like, I'll get on the phone with a client and talk to their student loan servicer with them. I will help them open an investment account online, even like helping a client answer a risk tolerance questionnaire, something that I feel like a lot of a lot of financial advisors, and I know that being in the industry for so long, I take it for granted a lot of the jargon that we talk about and a lot of the, like, ACATs and IRAs and, you know, 401k rollovers and all of those kinds of things. And even just answering simple questions like, how would you feel if the market took a 10% drop? Clients will look at me and ask me, like, how do I answer this question? And I think that that's a big part of the service that I provide through Budge Life and Budge Coach, is helping clients really answer those questions that they tend to get stuck on. Because I know if something complicated happens and I get stuck on something, I say, I'll take care of it later, and then it never happens, right?
Right. And so how do people compensate you for your services? Because I do think your business model is very unique.
Yeah, so I actually get paid on a monthly subscription model. So clients, there's a sliding scale on my website, and clients will pay basically anywhere from between $199 to $899 a month, depending on their income level. And we either meet together on a monthly basis through Budge Coach or meet on a quarterly basis through Budge Life. Every client gets a full financial plan and full access to me and my operations manager on a regular basis. But getting paid on a monthly subscription model has helped a lot of clients be able to budget in financial planning. I feel like, especially when working with high net worth clients and not being able to work with my friends, I realized that financial planning, it's something that Dialect always likes to say, financial planning is not a luxury, it's an expensive necessity. So I've been working and trying to figure out through Brunch and Budget how to kind of take the expensive part out of it. Because everyone needs financial planning on every level, that's what I believe. And so to help people pay for it monthly, and setting up a monthly subscription service really helps clients budget in the actual fee.
And where would you say most of your clients reside?
Most of my clients are actually based in New York. A lot of my clients find me on Yelp because that's where they're also looking for brunch. And so a lot of my clients are based in New York, but I do have a number of clients who live out of state. So I have a number of clients in California, in D.C., in the Midwest. And so really they come from all over the place, but most of my clients are based in New York.
Well, I'm a small investor in a small chain of restaurants in New York, and as a quid pro quo for doing this interview, I think you should start going to that place for brunch.
Send me the name. I'll put it on my list.
It's called The Smith. It's called The Smith.
The Smith.
The Ooh, Smith. Yeah, there's six of them, so I would appreciate if you go there. I'm just kidding. But
I love it.
So now, how do you feel that you integrate a lot of the workshops that you put on for the kids learning about money with your clientele?
So we actually do workshops for adults as well. And a lot of the material that we use for our students and our youth, we also end up using for the adults. And a lot of the habit building and mindset stuff that we use with kids really started with me seeing how adults reacted to it. So I feel like there's a symbiosis there, and they feed into each other a lot.
Yeah, and for anybody listening, you know, on the adult side or the kid side, there's really no shame in either way or wherever we're able to get you, because it's not something that is put together in really most places that are organized at all.
Yeah.
One of the things that I found to be so interesting during the financial crisis is some of the smartest people in the banking industry and in the brokerage industry really didn't understand risk. And they were in their 50s and 60s and 70s, and they were afraid to ask. They were afraid. They didn't have the ego strength to say, you know, what's a derivative? You know, what is the collateralized mortgage risk? Beta really work? And so a lot of the mistakes that a lot of Americans think were greed was just stupidity. And part of the stupidity is that it's very difficult for people, particularly who have what they believe some experience, to say, I don't know what that means.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I think I found that when I was working in wealth management too, is people who are very highly specialized in bonds or derivatives or, you know, equities or whatever it was, didn't understand how mortgages worked or how their credit cards worked or what their credit score even was. And that gap in knowledge to be able to say, hey, I actually don't understand what this means, I think is a very big step to take.
So, Pamela,
yeah, that's one of the things is, oh, go ahead.
So, Pamela, does part of your financial planning integrate the hip hop at all? I mean, do you ever get to integrate that into dealings just with a straight financial client?
Not with one-on-one clients, but with our workshops, and also with, we have a group financial planning platform for people of color called Dead Day Job Army, and we use a lot of the hip-hop pedagogy to do the group financial planning work.
So why did you decide to name it Dead Day Job Army?
Yeah, I mean, that actually came from, so we host a podcast ourselves, also called Brunch and Budget, and we used to be on an internet radio station called Bonfire Radio. And the program manager there was quitting her day job and started a hashtag called Dead Day Job Army. And when I was...
Shout out to Tasty Quiche.
Shout out to Tasty Quiche and TK in the AM. And so when we were conceptualizing the concept for this group financial planning for people of color platform, we thought it was such a great name because one thing is I feel like that people at their day job stop them from their dreams. And we really want people to not let their day job get in the way of financial independence, of generational wealth, of starting their own business. And so that's the impetus behind that name.
And not to say that everybody needs to go out there and quit their jobs and go start a business. It's about more of the entrepreneurial spirit and understanding, like, one thing we like to tell people about being a good employee once you've gotten a good job is to treat your boss more like a client rather than like a boss. So to have that type of mindset, no matter what your situation is, so you can feel like you're in control of your money.
I think that's great advice because oftentimes if you treat your boss like a boss, you're really treating him or her like your parent, which
that's
is
exactly.
Which usually doesn't go over so well because your boss doesn't love you like your mom or your dad do.
No, exactly.
So? I was about to ask a question and you were going to cut me off.
I was going to cut you off. So? You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KCSB, and we'll be right back with our final segment.
Hi, I'm Diane Duva with an invitation for you to enjoy a great dining experience at my favorite restaurant, the world-famous Arnaldi's Cafe, one of Santa Barbara's oldest and most intimate restaurants since 1940. It's located on the corner of Olive and Cota Streets in downtown Santa Barbara. Arnaldi's specializes in traditional home-style Italian food prepared with the freshest produce, finest quality meats and fish, and the very best imported Italian meats, cheeses, and olive oil, along with local fish and specials from our Santa Barbara Farmers Market, and an extensive wine list served in the unique atmosphere of a candlelit dining room. Arnaldi's also caters to weddings and rehearsal dinners, receptions, graduations, birthdays, holiday parties, or any special event, with two large dining rooms, a huge heated patio, fire pit, two bocce ball courts, and a stone barbecue with red oak wood. And Arnaldi's is happy to work with you to create a custom menu and handle any special requests. Visit Arnaldi's.com or call 805-962-5394.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
I'm Kelly Marsh, Vice President, California of Cornerstone Home Lending, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara native who has spent the past 20 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit thekellymarshteam.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Cornerstone Home Lending can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California Residential Mortgage Lending Act license number 41DB072220. California Financial Lending Law license number 60DB072528. Loan originator NMLS number 245822. Not a commitment to loan. Equal housing opportunity.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence.
And before the break, we were talking about your podcast, and I see on your website that you said that your podcast was about personal finance and racial economic inclusion. So what does that mean to you guys?
Yeah, one thing that, so the podcast started out as
me, marketing, brunch, and budget. I was going to talk about, just like basic personal finance stuff. And Dialect came in to really provide the color commentary and bring in the hip hop elements and things like that.
I mean, at first, like really just on the fun type of tip. Like,
yeah.
You know, I was just be the Ed McMahon and haha, I agree.
Yeah, and as we start, we know.
Well, we know it's easier to have two than one on a podcast.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And as we started really researching and digging into personal finance, and as I started working with my clients, about half of my clients are clients of color, and I found that I had to plan for them differently. They were more likely to have student loan debt. They are more likely first-generation college students. They were more likely to be taking care of generations before them, so paying for their parents' rent or helping their brothers or siblings out and things like that. And so as we dug more into that, we realized that you can't really talk about economics without talking about race. And you can't talk about money without talking about the racial wealth divide. And you can't talk about savings habits without talking about other systemic and policy changes that need to happen for people of color, and particularly Black and Latino folks.
Yeah, actually, to add more podcasts and more stuff that we're doing, we also produce the Race and Wealth podcast with Prosperity Now.
Yeah, and their Racial Wealth Divide initiative. So as we learn more and more stats, like one of the most shocking stats I know that I learned in this research is it will take an average of 228 years for the average Black family to catch up to the wealth of a white family today. And so the racial wealth divide is a chasm in a lot of ways. And so what we want to do is help educate people to understand that, yes, like financial education is important, but also understand how the system around you works and how to advocate for yourself within that system.
Yeah, from, you know, these larger, heavier concepts to the simple idea that wealth and income are not the same thing. You know, Pam's talking about how a lot of people of color, they have to take care of previous generations. So even if you are making a six-figure salary, you're not able to save money for retirement at the same rate as their peers.
Yeah, I've had so many clients come to me and say, I talked to another financial advisor before you, and they said that if I just stopped paying my mom's rent, then I could save money.
And that's not even an option.
Yeah, that's a non-negotiable. And so how do you plan for your life differently as someone who finds yourself in that situation, as a person of color, as a first-time college graduate with student loan debt, and things like that?
And similarly to what we do with the young people, a lot of it is about understanding, look, guys, you're not crazy. I know you've been doing the same work as other people or more work than other people, and you're not being able to see your money stack and grow, and there are systemic reasons and historical reasons why those things have happened, and we have to understand them before we can leap over those hurdles.
But, you know, there are some common problems, whether you're from a rich family, a poor family. And I found, you know, and I spent a lot of years in New York in the financial industry, that no matter how much money you make in salary, you're never going to have a bucket of wealth that will support you at the lifestyle you want to. You need some kind of capital transaction. You need some type of stock option benefit. You need some really concerted effort to save part of your salary every paycheck, because people tend, it's natural, to spend at the level that they're earning. And it's very difficult for anybody, particularly in a city like New York or San Francisco, to actually save money and have anything at the end if they haven't had something at the end of the rainbow that is capital profit.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, lifestyle creep is so real, right? When you think about how you're able to live as a college student versus when you're making $60,000 versus when you're making $100,000 and so on. I feel like that things that were once luxuries very easily become the norm and very easily become habits.
We're just about out of time, but I think we should leave it by saying that the reason that you should call Pamela and her group is because they're guaranteeing that if you listen to them, you'll become rich. Isn't that the case? Can we say that?
Well, I think what's really important, though, is that demographic in which they're working with is setting them up to be wealthy later on.
Just joking. Thank you so much. Thank you for all the work you're doing with kids. You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290, and we'll be back next week.
It's